The 8/25/16 meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary Education is called order at 10 a.m. The board may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38431-03-83 on any matter on the agenda. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exception of hearings. Ms. Stanfield, are there any changes requested?
Yes, Madam Chair, we, if possible, need to ensure that we hear the supplemental license application for a change of ownership for University of Phoenix prior to, let's say, 11 or 12, no later.
Prior to 11 o'clock? So it needs to start by 11? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll keep 9 o'clock on.
Thank you.
The minutes of the June 21st meeting.
No, they're posted.
The meetings of the last meeting on June 21st at 16 has been posted to the website. As a reminder, the State Board's policy for the recording of minutes is to audio record all meetings and post to the website. They are generally posted within 24 hours of the meeting. Before we do roll call and start the meeting, we'd like to introduce our new member, Dr. Paul Midman from the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. If you would like to give us a little bit of information about yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Paul Mittman. I'm president of Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. I've been president since 1999. I hold degrees in as a doctor of naturopathic medicine and practiced for 25 years, starting in 1985. I also have a doctor of education degree. I've served on site teams for the Higher Learning Commission and have served on a variety of boards. I really welcome the opportunity to be part of this board. This was a good learning experience. Thank you to Terry, and look forward to working with him.
Great. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Because the meeting is audio recorded, we will do a roll call to for all members of the board and staff. So we'll start again with you.
Paul Mittman here.
Craig Jacob here.
Glenn Tharp here.
Chris Leonard here.
And Dave Walser.
Terry Stanfield, Executive Director.
Keith Blanchard, Deputy Director.
Rachel Karras, Administrative Assistant.
Frankie Shinnack, Ferguson, Attorney General, Attorney for the Board.
Great. And are there any other members on the board? On the phone? Okay, we're calling roll. Speak fast.
Here.
Name, please.
Hank Coretta.
All right, now we will begin.
Madam Chair, yes, we also, just for the record, get an approval of the audio posting of the minutes on the website. They still need to be approved by the board for accuracy.
Great. Just so has everyone reviewed the minutes? Who attended?
I'll make a motion to approve. I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. So the first thing on the agenda is update and discussion and possible actions for starting with ITT Institute. So the ACICS show bus director. Hello.
Hi.
Good
morning.
State your name for the record.
Brian Goffertson. Zach Tierney, counsel for ITT Technical Institute, and we should have Sean Crawford, Senior Vice President, Chief Compliance and Risk Officer for the company on the phone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Which one of you would like to give a brief update to the board?
Mr. Crawford will.
Thank you. I just wanted to appreciate the opportunity to provide additional update and information. So, since the last board meeting, we had received on August 17th the decision by ACICS to continue the show cause that was instituted earlier this year. A significant number of the issues were deemed to be addressed, but there was a request for additional information that we are working to compile and submit by the stipulated deadline of November 1st. I would also submit that we provided a copy of our 8K that was officially submitted and filed on August 18th to the board.
Thank you. We have that. Do any board members have any questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for submitting all of the information. And, of course, as you receive additional information, please continue to provide it to Ms. Stanfield. And when would you like them to come before the board to give an update?
I would think we should have them in January. ACICS meets in early December. They should have the notification from them by the end of December so we can have them in January meeting.
Okay. So any information that you get from now until then, please provide it as soon as you receive it. And then we would like to see you before the board again in January for a further discussion.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. And good
Absolutely.
Luck.
Consideration.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Next, the Art Institute of Phoenix for Financial Show Cause Directive.
Good morning. This is Jennifer Newham, AVP for Accreditation and Licensing for EDMC.
And good morning. Chad Williams, Campus President of the Art Institute of Phoenix.
Great. And is anyone else on the phone for the Art Institute?
No, that would just be me.
Okay. Which one of you would like to give us a brief update?
I will. On August 3rd, as you know, we were invited to a financial show cause hearing. We chose to do an in-person hearing and present information to the council. On August 22nd, as I believe you were copied as well, we received a notification that ACICS would determine that we would be on continued financial show cause and probation. We will be presenting materials for November 1st for their December council meeting, and we will be providing a written response as follow-up.
Any members of the board have any questions? Okay, so same as please provide any information that you have between now and January, and then come before the board again in January to give us an update of how things are going.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And Tucson College, ACICS, Financial Show Cause Director.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. I am Carly Brisman. I'm General Counsel and Chief Compliance Officer of Delta Career Education Corporation. My colleagues, Ned Snyder, who's President of Online Operations and the Executive in Charge of Tucson College, as well as Dennis Chavez, the Campus Director at Tucson College, are on the phone as well. Our update is a bit happier than the updates you heard from EDMC and ITT, and I don't say that with gusto or anything like that, but we too had an in-person appearance with ACICS on August 3rd, probably past the Art Institute folks in the elevator at some point. On Monday this week, August 22nd, we were pleased to receive from ACICS a letter vacating the financial show cause directive. ACICS has determined to continue Delta, the parent entity, as well as its ACICS accredited institutions on quarterly reporting. That is a result that, from our standpoint, was as good as we could have expected under the circumstances, and we're happy to receive it. I'd be remiss if I didn't comment on the developments between the June 21st board meeting, at which I made comments on the show cause and on Tucson College, and today. Ms. Stanfill and her colleagues know in early July we determined to cease enrollment at Tucson College and seven of our campuses around the country. My remarks to you on June 21st, I assure you, were truthful, even as they were positive. As you might appreciate, 2 days later on June 23rd, the world really changed for us and all other ACICS accredited institutions when the National Advisory Committee on Institutional Quality and Integrity endorsed the Department of Education staff recommendation to deny continued recognition to ACICS.
in an instant, we were forced to confront the reality that over the course of the next year and a half or two, we may find ourselves having to seek an alternative or creditor, and against that backdrop, continuing to operate Tucson College and seven other campuses that we had hoped was simply not feasible. The negative contribution contributed by those campuses was simply not a burden we'd be able to carry with us to another creditor. So I wanted to say that openly to you because as I looked at that week, it felt very much like a complete reversal, but I want to assure you that on June 21st, we did have hope, and by the evening of June 23rd, we did not have much hope, and that accounts for the decision. So let me pause there and certainly entertain any questions you may have.
Glenthar Pierre, when are your last students exiting when the operations ceasing? What's your projection on that?
This is again. Yeah, go ahead, Dennis, if you have the latest numbers.
Sure. We're last students projected to graduate in May of 2017.
Yeah, so we, and these numbers, as you can appreciate, may change day to day, but we have approximately 140 students under roof currently. We have told every one of them that if their desire is to continue and complete under our roof, they can do so. And as Dennis indicates, by the end of our fiscal year 2017, which ends June 30th, 2017, we expect that all of those students will have completed on their current schedules.
And you have provisions to keep key staff there, knowing that the school's closing?
Yes. Beyond the professionalism of Mr. Chavez and his colleagues, we have put a framework in place to assure ourselves and our students that the staff necessary for them to complete and complete in a responsible way will be in place.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Anyone else have any questions? We appreciate your statements, and we did understand that the world kind of turned on its axis for you after the meeting. So thank you very much for that update. And as a result of ACICS action and you being on a teach-out, I don't believe there's anything else that we need from you beyond staying on quarterly financial reporting. But please remember that any additional information that you get needs to be provided immediately to Ms. Stanfill.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thank you very much for joining us then.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Next item on the agenda is the discussion of possible action of the financial status of my Delta assistant. Does anyone hear from me? Ms. Neffel, will you give us an update?
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the Board, at your October 2015 meeting, the Board approved the conditional vocational program license for my general assisting with the stipulations that the $100,000 surety bond be maintained and to submit June 30th in-house statements by August 1st and to attend this meeting and provide you with a financial update. Dr. Fulcher has submitted the information as requested and to include a two-year projected budget and is planned to approve, and we have Dr. Fulcher here, and we have someone else with us.
I do have someone else, my advisory council. Good morning, everyone. I've prepared a bulleted summation of the five-page document for management's plan to approve.
And first, if we can have you introduce yourself, please.
Yeah, my name is Dan Fulcher. I'm consulting to my dental assisting on behalf of Vector LLC, a professional services firm.
What I sent you earlier, it's just a summation. If you don't want it, then I don't.
So that's what you've already provided to us?
No.
This summarizes that management plan that you received.
So, it's just a. Thank you.
like to give us a brief statement?
I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here, and that might sound odd, but it's really allowed me the opportunity to put down a plan and really make sure that the success of this school, it goes beyond whatever's in my head and gets put down on paper. So it's a good opportunity to review everything. So I appreciate it.
I have several questions. First of all, thank you for putting together the package and providing us with the information that we requested. In your bullet pointed information, okay. As I just scanned through it, see that you are estimating the value of the company at $300,000.
Correct.
How is that value determined?
I'll
answer on that subject. I went ahead and did the valuation myself, and the components that went into the valuation included current assets, current liabilities, long-term liabilities, intellectual property, key personnel, sweat equity, and relationships or goodwill.
Okay, and your professional background is?
Is in business development.
Okay.
Organizational development.
What is your educational background, and do you have any professional certifications?
My professional certifications are all related to project management. I'm a certified project manager, which does not directly impact the work that I've done here. My background as it relates to this valuation includes I have actually founded two companies of my own, three professional services companies, if you count Vector, dating back to 1998. So I'm been intimately involved with.
So based on extensive professional experience, it is your opinion that the value is approximately $300,000?
Correct. Using accepted industry standards, very conservative ones at that. I've applied values to these various attributes that I explained.
And I didn't mean to get into a debate on this point, but help me understand what industry standards were used to. The reason, just my background, so you'll understand. I'm a certified public accountant. I work in the estate planning area where valuations are very important. Mm-hmm. And in order for a value to have some weight mm-hmm. given to it, normally the person offering that has extensive training in the area and has certifications from various things. Now, that does not mean that a trained business valuation professional is going to offer a more accurate value than someone who buys and sells companies for a living. Obviously, that person needs to be very good at it, but it's a different world. Mm-hmm. And so help me understand what professional standards you were employing to determine the value of this business.
So the standards would not be similar to GAAP standards, as you would understand them. I probably misspoke or overreached by mentioning acceptable industry standards,
Okay. Because
that then brings to mind something like GAAP. But this would be based upon my own experience over the past 20 years, buying and selling companies.
All right. And I think that's probably adequate for what we're dealing with.
And, you know, as anybody generally knows, the value of anything is what somebody's willing to pay for it.
Sure.
So although I propose that this value is $300,000, we might not get two nickels to rub together for it. So.
Or somebody may pay $60,000.
Right.
Okay. So, doctor, with regard to the original submission, I've got some questions. And I am on page.
And are you referring to the management plan?
I am the management plan, and there aren't page numbers, so it's the executive summary.
There aren't page numbers?
I'm not on my copy.
Yeah, that's fine.
Or maybe it's covered up by the. My clip.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Anyway.
There's only five to go through, so.
Right. So, this page right here.
Gotcha.
We've got this on the one hand, the table, student success rates.
Mm-hmm.
I have some questions about what this is telling us. First of all, I appreciate the explanation of why only four of the eight students, you know, starting in February, were seeking employment.
Mm-hmm.
And that answered one of my questions. You have a column titled Average Starting Salary.
Mm-hmm.
For those who did become employed.
Correct.
Is that a salary or is that an hourly rate?
Hourly wage.
Okay, hourly wage. And were they employed full-time or part-time?
Full-time.
40 hours a week?
Yes.
All right.
I mean, as far as I know, that's where they got hired.
Okay. That's what the students reported to you?
Correct.
And I want to thank you for giving us a compilation report that's fairly timely through June 30. Currently, in your compiled financial statement as of June 30, member equity is $105,000. Plus, let's say there's another $400,000 of sweat equity in there, so that the value of the business is $300,000. Based on your expert's opinion. What is your personal financial situation? Because in order for this company to go forward until it starts becoming profitable, it's going to be reliant to a certain extent on your ability to sustain this. So tell us something about your personal financial position.
Going into this, my wife and I put in just over $100,000 into it, and now that has taken.
It's evaporated.
Been taken up, in not only our ability to live, but in supporting the company. In other words, not taking money from it as a salary. But my finance says, I still own 50% of a dental office currently, one of the things that I did calculate in addition to this is my loss of income just from not being a dentist. But my financial status, I'm in the process of filing disability for back problems that prevent me from actively pursuing dentistry. And that was filed as of November of last year, and it's still under review. So, in other words, it's not the greatest. I mean, we do have assets, but it's still month to month.
Okay. So can I add to that statement?
Sure.
So in addition to Dr. Fulcher's own personal well-being and wealth and assets and things of that nature, there's also a contingency plan that we've put in place in case things do, in fact, his personal funding is exhausted. So we do have a line of credit with Compass Bank. He alluded to the interest that he owns in a dental practice, a current dental practice, which is in the process of being prepared for sale. So there are additional funds that may be utilized to help support my dental system. In addition to that, there is a third contingency plan where we've actually prepared an investor prospectus that we can present to potential investors, offering both equity or pursuing an equity stake within the company or short or long-term loans.
All right. Help me understand something here. If I understood your business model, you're going to have a clinic And I'm assuming it's for financially disadvantaged persons primarily who are going to be taking advantage, because you said it was a discount clinic.
So if there are reduced fees.
Reduced fees, right.
Anybody can take advantage of it.
Well, right, but I'm assuming that would be the primary market for the clinic. And you're also going to have the school, and the school is, in combination with the clinic, is the way you're going to be making money going forward.
Correct.
Who's going to be serving those patients if you're not able to be a full-time dentist? Are you going to be hiring some other person to come in and serve that role?
Yes.
Okay. And that's part of the budget that I saw in the insurance.
Correct.
Do you currently have other dentists working there?
We've had a couple come in here and there to try out in the anticipation that this is moving forward, but nobody on an ongoing basis now.
All right. Do any of you have any questions for?
Yeah, I have questions as well. So, Dr. Fulcher, what is your feeling on this? How long are you going to give this enterprise to start turning around, or do you think you are looking to sell right away, or try to?
No, I have no intentions of selling. I mean, I can't practice dentistry long term.
Okay.
So that's not my plan, and I couldn't rely on the disability policy. In essence, because they always take forever, and it's just not. I didn't want to rely on that. So this is my long-term plan. Now, can I always go back to dentistry? Yes, that's not my plan. My plan is to stay in education. My original plan was to go and teach at the dental schools. But this provided me the opportunity to own my own business and still do what I love to do. So I don't plan on going. My plan was to go all in for an entire year. And then evaluate at that point. So the plan is not to stop, and we have classes scheduled all the way through December. So as far as starting times.
Okay. And the big challenge, do you feel, is it the marketing and trying to recruit the students, or is it your expense?
I think it was. That's always the challenge, is trying to figure out how to get students in the door, and there's been a lot of expenses. Paid out to try and figure that out that we've fine-tuned over the last 6 months, and so that's part of the process of moving forward, is to put the money in the best ways possible. So
if you want some to look at the tangible things that we're doing to support the long-term viability of the company.
Right. I mean, the new marketing campaigns and sales process, what does that entail?
Yeah, you can look at, you're referring to slide 6, mm-hmm. in which we are implementing Infusionsoft, which is a customer relations management, contact management, marketing campaign, sales process tool set. So we're in the process of implementing that now. And part of that, the most important part of that is, during the past 6 months, we've had various marketing campaigns underway with no way of actually measuring our success. That's what Dr. Fulcher had alluded to, is that we've admittedly thrown a lot of money on the wall and to see what stuck, but had no way of actually measuring whether or not something was performing well or not well, so that we could discard those non-performers and accelerate the performers. That's our, when I say we're implementing new marketing campaigns, that's in fact what we're doing. We're taking, for instance, we had been doing Google Ads and Facebook, a lot of social media marketing. Mm-hmm. That proved ineffective. So we're discarding that, and we're accelerating some other marketing channels and exploring net new ones as well. So with that laundry list of potential opportunities to market, we need to surround that with a framework that can help us measure success, measure performance. And that's part of what I've been brought in to do. So Infusionsoft will allow us to do it. It's a very well-recognized, capable tool set If you, I think some of you are probably familiar with Constant Contact, which has this is a more full-blown, robust version of Constant Contact. And the biggest, most exciting thing for us is the sales process. We currently have no way of really understanding why our lead-to-student conversion rate is low. We haven't been able to identify why our leads have not been converted to enrolled students or to patients. And this sales process that we will automate within Infusionsoft will allow us to do that.
Are you getting enough inquiries, or are you just not converting? That,
we are not converting.
Conversion.
For instance, we've had 400 leads, and we've converted 4% of them.
Over what time frame?
Is that 6 months?
Yeah.
6 months.
And again, you know, coming before the board, I have no idea what's another industry standard. You know, and so
right.
and I've discussed and I talked to Craig. He asked him, "What's your enrollees?" And I told him, and from what your response was, "Well, that's pretty good. You must have a good enrollment person." And in my mind, I'm like, missed opportunities. You know, and so I don't know what the industry standard is.
I think you're correct in that. I mean, all of us are in schools, which is a lot of us up sitting in front of you. It's the great thing we do, and I do applaud you. You do need metrics, or you have no idea where you can improve, where you can improve.
Right.
I guess my larger question, though, is I was a lead on your first, on your original application, and I believe it was a you. But we talk a lot about that. You know, one of the things I worry about, you know, generally a school, I mean, minimally 2 years is hemorrhage of cash, you know, until you can get. And I guess we're about a year into it now, and I worry.
Almost 8 months.
I just worry that we have the capital and infrastructure to continue on. One of the other problems, too, in my estimation, is because I get all the dental schools, and I get up until recently about two or three a meeting. So there's a lot of dilution of the market out there, because there's a lot of people like you, a lot of dentists, who thought, I can make some money doing schools, and there's a bunch of them out there. So you're buying against a giant, I mean, pretty good population up there. So.
The difference is, as you've seen in the financials, that I've jumped in to do this on a full time basis, not as an ancillary to a dental office.
Right. No, I get that, but that also, well, that's good. And
yeah,
we agree.
But I don't have
that.
That
also
has
a risk.
I mean, not going into
your personal finances too much, but as Mr. Walter asked, it doesn't sound like there's the Daddy Warbucks waiting to give you an infusion of cash if you need it. And that's what's concerning.
That is my concern.
I definitely have options for cash. I mean, I
how big is your credit line, if I may ask? You would
$40,000.
$40,000. Okay. Okay. A few questions.
First of all, what's your relationship?
Father-son. Okay. And are you employed or doing this consulting on a pro bono basis because Dr. Fulcher is your son, which I totally appreciate.
We anticipated that question, and currently it's pro bono.
Okay. And is the Infusionsoft, the cost of Infusionsoft currently reflected in the budget?
It is.
And how much is it?
$300 per month.
And then I guess to the previous question about the plethora of dental educational programs in the Valley, what would you say is unique or relatively unique about My Dental Assisting Institute?
There's two things. Number one, instead of sending our students on externships for their clinical experience, we keep them in-house, in other words, an internship, and they're required to have 64 hours of clinical hands-on experience before they graduate. That doesn't mean that they can't get an externship if they don't want one. We can provide that opportunity for them. Obviously, that gives them exposure in a different office. However, with keeping it in-house, and you can see from the procedures that we do that they're getting a lot of hands-on experience in a short period of time, to where by their third and fourth week, it's pretty much running like a normal dental office. So that's number one. Number two, we're, as far as I know, one of the only schools, if not the only, I don't know, that requires them to pass the x-ray exam before graduating. So that's what keeps our graduation rate at 79%, whatever it, I think that's what it was, is that that we don't give them their certificate until they pass that exam. But the success rate on the exam has continually gone up. So our current class is so far 100%, and we have two students taking it today. So that's another unique characteristic of that, is that we're not sending them out to try and procure employment without the necessary credentials.
So just as a couple of recommendations or ideas, one is that Infusionsoft allows you to, I think, to add videos to emphasize the points that you're just making in terms of how you interact with prospective students. And then I noticed that, I can't remember, how many of your students either left or went on missions?
Just one. Okay. One is leaving on a mission.
Okay. That'd be interesting. An interesting idea, given the fact that a lot of developing countries don't have dentists, and having dental assistants who are going in those communities would add value to.
I don't think it's that kind of
mission. It's not that. It's not a dental mission.
It's a church mission.
It's a church.
No, I understood that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But as from a marketing standpoint,
Our group of practices goes on a mission every year to Cambodia, which I went on in November of 14. And the idea is to incorporate that into the curriculum. It won't be this November, but hopefully in the future that we can implement that.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
So also to your point about the value that, you know, what values do we bring to the table? How do we differentiate ourselves within the marketplace, which is, in fact, admittedly saturated? As Dr. Fulcher explained, having the school along with the in-house clinic, what we haven't been doing a very good job of is becoming laser focused in communicating that brand and leveraging that uniqueness. One thing I noticed when I came in and took a look at things was that one thing I noted was brand confusion. I think when we project ourselves out into the public, it's unclear, are you a school? Are you a dental office? And how do I engage you on either front, or do I engage you on both? So one of the things that we're going to implement during September is we're going to implement a plan to become much more laser focused on brand identification.
Well, roughly, I just want to comment on that, not to burst your bubble, be contrary, but again, I've probably been the lead on about 10, 12 dental schools exactly like this, and they all do clinic in the clinic. So that, I mean, everyone that I've approved. So it's not a unique model. It would be a unique model for those of us that run the larger schools of longer programs, as that's where we do send them out, but almost all of them, you know, their whole plan is to do the clinic within the practice in the school. So I just wanted to let you know.
I would be interested to hear which ones do, because every assistant I've hired has zero clinical experience.
Okay, we can't go too long into this conversation, but just to let you know, all of the ones that have come before the board, they are dentists who are practicing. Mm-hmm. And they are bringing students into their practice, and these students are working side by side with their staff while they're educating them, and the majority of them offer the student the externship at their own office, but have a list of additional dentists who are willing to take the students on should the dentist end up having be lucky enough to have more students than he can serve. So honestly, it is not just common, it's standard. Okay. That all of the dental schools, these kinds of schools have that.
Okay.
Difference is, you say dental clinic, and honestly, in my mind, that brought up the picture of the having, you know, non-experienced people working. So I guess that is a good thing or a bad thing, and I think that's why he had the impression that you were helping the less fortunate, because by clinic, that to me means I can't afford to go to a real dentist, so I'm going to go to a clinic because it's cheaper, and I understand these people are practicing. So, again, we can't get really involved in that, but you need to do a little more research, and you can't use the word unique if you're not unique. And so far, honestly, you've said nothing to me that seems unique compared to all of the packages that we have approved, so be very careful with that. And the idea of having a video that would sell why you're unique, that is awesome, as long as you don't put your toe over the line, because if we get complaints about false advertising about you, you come for the complaint committee, and you know what, people are from the complaint committee. A question for you based on the information you gave us, and this is supposed to be just a financial review, but because you gave some information that raised some other questions, I would like to ask them. What is the minimum age that you are admitting?
17.
Okay. So your student who was in high school did meet that age requirement?
Yes.
Okay. Admittedly, I was going back and forth about whether $10,000 was an awful lot to spend or not enough to spend, given all the other dental ones that have come in here, you know, trying to get, you know, a couple of students. So I don't have any experience in that, but I'd like to know that you're looking at it and deciding if your money is going where it should go. You talk about hands-on experience, and again, I'd just like to let you know that all of them
run of the mill.
Hands-on.
Pardon? I said run of the mill.
It's not unique, but yeah, I mean, you should believe you do it better than they do.
Right, and just be careful how you bring it.
Yeah, we appreciate that feedback, and we'll certainly look into it.
I'm not trying to burst your bubbles anyway, but I'm just saying if it's the standard for what we've seen for the last 7 years.
And because you aren't going to practice, most of these other businesses perhaps have a leg up on you in that they know for sure that they have, since they're running a dental office, so they're not worried about getting staff in to be able to teach because they've got it covered with themselves. So that's a not good unique situation that you have in mind. So make sure that if you're getting students in and you're getting teachers in, that you have people to teach them. Because if you don't, then you're false advertising. You're telling people they're going to be live practicing on all of them. There are no models to be had. So that's a question. Anyone else have any questions? So this was just a discussion of possible action. Ms. Temple, do you have any suggestions of what next steps?
There wouldn't at this time be any action on the license itself. However,
how about financial reporting?
You could put on financial, ask that you continue to maintain the bond and submit it for your financial reporting.
So you're not currently on financial reporting?
Can you do that in 6 months?
I was going to say exactly that they should provide quarterly financial reporting. Our council will tell you exactly what that means, and that you maintain your surety bond.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make that a motion?
Yes, you may.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any questions? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Good luck, and don't sell yourself short, but don't speak that horn too loud either.
Tell me, just as I know that at the end of the year we provide financial statements. Is there so there's no next board to come before, or that's for financial review?
That's for the quarterly reporting is before the finance committee for your conditional regular, which will be
January, I believe. 17th.
About the same time.
Okay.
That's just the way it's going to time out.
Perfect.
So the quarterly reporting is calendar year.
Yeah. It's your fiscal year end.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
All right. The next item on the agenda is a supplemental license application for a change of ownership control for the University of Phoenix and Western International University. Those representatives will come up. And Ms. Temple, if you can give us a recap.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. On February 7, 2016, Apollo Education Group, the parent company of University of Phoenix and WIU, entered into an agreement and plan of merger with AP, I provided to you the general overview of this transaction, which obviously was extremely complex, was in the February 7th 8K filing. UOP and WIU did submit the change of control to HLC in February. On July 7th, HLC notified the institutions of its decision to defer action pending written confirmation from the department regarding their pre-acquisition application. HLC has agreed to hold or convene a special meeting if necessary upon the receipt of DE's response. Your board member lead is Mr. Walder and Mr. Dr. Rada, and
could we have you introduce yourselves for the record?
Surely. I'm Dan Litterall. I'm Vice President and Deputy General Counsel of the Apollo Education Group, parent of UOPX and Western International. I have with me Austin Rhodes on my right, who is Director of Regulatory Affairs at the University of Phoenix and is also an Associate General Counsel of the Apollo Education Group, and Jeannie Yaki Fine on my left with the law firm of Cooley LLP, who is counsel to the buyer.
Would you like to give us an update?
Yeah, I just a very brief update, if I could, in supplementation. First, we appreciate the board hearing us today and advancing us on the agenda. That was very helpful, particularly as we have counsel from out of town. This does go, of course, to our change of control petition, which we filed. By way of background, more than a year ago, Apollo Education Group, which is the parent of the two institutions under consideration today, began an examination of strategic options that it believed would be best for the company and for its constituent institutions. Apollo Education Group has additional domestic and international institutions, as well as University of Phoenix and Western International. It was decided that the best strategic approach was a go-private transaction. Currently, Apollo Education Group is a publicly traded corporation. We went through a fairly deliberative and careful process to identify investors. That process took a period of months. And in February 2016, as Ms. Danfield has indicated, we executed an agreement to be acquired by a consortium of investors. Before I describe the investors, I think it's important to note a couple of things. One, this is an equity transaction. There is no debt being used by the consortium to acquire Apollo Education Group, which is, I think, a little unusual in the industry at this point. So the institutions will not be burdened by additional debt from the transaction itself. It's not a leverage transaction. And while we will go private, of course, University of Phoenix and Western International will continue to file all reports that it files today with its regulators at the state or federal level or with its accreditors, something the board well knows, but I think has been bandied about a bit in the press otherwise. So to briefly review the transaction, Apollo Education Group would be acquired by AP8 Queso Holdings Limited Partnership, which is an affiliate of Apollo Global Management. Queso will become the parent of Apollo Education Group, that is essentially removing the public shareholders and substituting it with a consortium. University of Phoenix and Western International, however, will continue to be owned, just as they are today, 100% by Apollo Education Group. The Queso entity is going to be owned by a consortium of investors, and there's really three groups. The first one is Apollo Global Management. Apollo Global Management is a large publicly traded private equity firm, has about $170 billion under management. So it is substantial in terms of its financial wherewithal. It has education sector experience, including McGraw-Hill, and significant investments which went into McGraw-Hill's products, including accelerating their digital platforms. I think they invested something approaching $200 million in McGraw-Hill, in addition to the acquisition. They were also an investor in Laureate Education, another proprietary higher education company. And also had investments in Connections Academy. Second member of the consortium is Vistria. Vistria is a mid-market private equity firm based in Chicago, which also has significant experience in education. It owns Penn Foster Education, which is about a 100-year-old company. It does accredited education at the high school and some post-secondary, and actually has a college that does associate degrees, which is regulated by this board. Its chief operating officer is Tony Miller, who during the first term of the current administration was the Deputy United States Secretary of Education and the Chief Operating Officer of the Department of Education. So obviously significant experience in the regulatory realm there. Third member of the consortium is the Najafi Companies, which is headed by John Najafi. It's a long-term family, local investment firm that some of you may know, and they have experience in the ed tech sector. Each group, individually and collectively, has endorsed and done so publicly the strategic plan of the University of Phoenix and looks to provide the resources to execute it. They are investors. They're not operating companies. Like other firms, they are, in essence, buying talent. That is, the people that run the institutions that we have today, both at Apollo Group and at the individual institutions. I think that Ms. Stanfill has given you the regulatory status generally of our other regulators, but if I could note just a couple of additional items. The Higher Learning Commission has completed its fact-finding visit with the university, issued a staff report, received our response, and it went before the board at its late June meeting. As Ms. Stanfill indicated, the board deferred its action pending only the United States Department of Education's action. It's important to note that the commission in doing so did not ask us for one additional scrap of information and agreed to hold a special meeting on 30 days notice. So I don't necessarily read anything into the decision of that, but I think it's pretty clear we have at least satisfied their appetite for information at this juncture, and they're waiting for the department to act. We have filed pre-acquisition review memorandums for both Western International University and the University of Phoenix with the United States Department of Education, together with such supplementation as they have requested across the course of the last several months, and that approval is pending with the department. We have completed at the state level all other pre-closing consents that are required for the transaction. We have worked through and either filed ahead of the deadline or will file any post-closing regulatory consents with other states and our other programmatic creditors. So we are here to ask you today for approval. We realize that would be conditioned on approval from our institutional accreditor, the Higher Learning Commission, and the United States Department of Education. And any of us are happy to answer your questions.
Do you have an estimate when the Department of Education will get back to you?
I think it's fair to say the department acts in strange and mysterious ways sometimes, including its own timelines. I think we're hopeful that the department will act in the near future, that is, before the summer is out or in early fall. We know the secretary is committed to act before he leaves office because he said that publicly. So we know we'll have that in the next few months.
Can you help us understand what you said this, the origin of this change was strategic planning that the institution itself took? And what's the business imperative that required or made it, in your view, optimal for the institution to no longer be publicly traded and to go private?
I think that's both a good and a fair question. First, I would say the imperative was not really financial. I think the balance sheet's pretty strong, and I think that's clear from the financial information that we filed. I think a couple of things argued for this transaction. The first one is that the University of Phoenix in particular is undergoing some transformation, including a transformation which I believe will make it a higher retaining, but albeit a smaller institution. I think that requires a bit more runway, and I think we all believe that it was better to have that runway with longer-term investors than being quite so sensitive to the quarterly cycle of the public market. I think there are also considerations which go beyond our domestic institutions, which are before the board today, which include additional development, potentially acquisitions of international institutions. Apollo Education Group has, I believe, 11 institutions now, four of which are domestic. So the other seven are foreign. And to some degree, the current position of our Apollo Global division, while also healthy in financial terms, looks to a longer-term strategy. So I think if you wrap all of those together, it argued for moving to a longer-term private equity strategy.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
So a couple of questions, just updates in terms of HLC, but one question in terms of the application and numbers. So it's in the application, and it's the third page, I think, or second or third page. It has the student count. The student count is going from 198, 155, 144, 132. But then, and the revenue the first time goes, you know, 2.5 to 1.6, but then it jumps up with a lower student count. So I just, I'm trying to understand.
And that's
let me give you the other piece that I'm trying to connect with this. I looked at the HLC document. It's very clear. Mission staying the same, going to do the same work. The mission is essentially not changing for ULP. So without a changing mission, student count down, and then revenue down, but then it pops up. So just any color on that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think I can answer that. I think what you're seeing, again, is a product of this being at the Apollo Education Group consolidated level in the application materials. And so that also includes not just University of Phoenix, which, of course, has the lion's share of that enrollment, but the other subsidiaries, including Apollo Global as well. And so while the enrollments, which are primarily University of Phoenix in these numbers, are projected to go down, if you would see a corresponding University of Phoenix-specific revenue figure, that would have a stair-step approach with that as well.
Good. Makes sense. Okay, so the letter, the updated letter that we got in terms of HLC, and I know you guys have done a lot of work in this area in terms of the last visit, and you know one of the things that you solved for very well was the board, you know, and the board of trustees, and that you addressed those issues. It seems that that's something they're concerned about as now this goes to a new transition and the independence of the board of trustees as they address here. Can you speak about the ways you're thinking about addressing that, the independence of the board after the transaction?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a fair question, although, of course, and we appreciate the allusion, but we've done some accreditation work, clearly we have, from our reaffirmation in 2012 and 2013 through a fairly brief notice period. One of the factors was the old HLC criteria 1D, which went to the autonomous board structure. Then, actually, we went through another change of control proceeding because it had to do with our unique structure of shareholders at the Apollo level, and in making our late founder shares irrevocable for the university. And then finally, we've gone through a fact-finding visit vis-a-vis this change of control. So four visits in the last essentially 3 years, all of which looked at the governance structure of the institution. I think HLC is always concerned about independent governance, and for good reason, and that is to assure that in all types of institutions, the board's first and foremost duty is to the institution decisions. I think we address it in fairly simple terms, which is that nothing is changing in the relationship between Apollo Education Group and either of the two subsidiaries which this board has authority of. That is also true for our Colorado-based subsidiary, the College for Financial Planning. So that the kinds of structures that were put in place and the commission first approved in 2013 during the reaffirmation remain in effect today. It means that you have a majority of the board, which requires independence, and that's under a fairly strict HLC independence standard. There are only certain reserve powers which go to Apollo Education Group, and then Apollo Education Group has the ability to appoint a minority of directors to the institutional boards. We also have to have an independent chair and independent vice chair. So I think how we respond to HLC is that the buyers intend to maintain that structure going forward. And to do otherwise would require a change in the bylaws, which would subject the institution, I think, to both institutions, really, to accreditation issues. I think, too, that the buyers have made some other representations, which are that they will attempt to put folks on the board, which indeed have educational experience, in the same way that many of the Apollo executives, the non-independent members of the institutional boards, brought significant education experience to the table, just as many of you do. So I think that's the way to address it. I don't think the commission really has further concerns on that issue, and they will be back for our comprehensive evaluation sometime in 2017 or 2018, depending on when they approve this transaction.
So moving from UOP, just real quick, to WIU, yeah. What are the issues in terms of HLC that they are looking at? Is the planning efforts, and they called out some of the core components, which I don't have the book in front of me, around 3C, 4C, I know it's faculty and curriculum and teaching, 5C is planning and whatever. But there is a significant positive move in the projections in terms of WIU's growth back to sort of a healthy growth. And I'm assuming that's sort of what they're addressing in 5C. And can you speak a little bit about WIU?
And let me see if I can give you a little color on how HLC approached it. I think WIU is in a different posture to some degree than the University of Phoenix is. And I think that's true in terms of the transition it undertook and its need for support from Apollo Education Group in financial terms over the last couple of years. The buyers, I think, are supportive of that process. They've indicated their support. The buyers met separately with the commission. But I think, like Apollo Education Group, they will continue to evaluate WIU going forward. And I think it is clear and apparent that the transition must be successful at some point, either in terms of strategic direction or execution, clearly both. And if it's not, then that evaluation, may result in a different path for WIU, or I suppose it might result in some other action by the buyers. So I think we've been forthright with HLC over that. I think the buyers have been forthright. I don't know if Jeannie wants to say something more about that. But I don't think there's any illusions that exists, and we're sharing that concern with the commission, and it's really very different from where UOPX is.
Yeah. That's great.
I said that those were all my questions. I lied. There was another question I failed to ask. You said that in essence what the buyers are acquiring is the intellectual knowledge of management and the team that's been put together. What plans are in place to keep that team together?
Well, and I don't want to misspeak. Obviously, there is significant intellectual property which belongs to the University of Phoenix and other things.
Sure.
The point I was really trying to make, just to be clear, is that these were not operators. These were investors, so that I think the board should have some comfort, and I'll address your specific question, that they're not going to wholesale move out the people that understand and have the institutional knowledge and run these institutions. I think there are a number of mechanisms which have been put in place and exist through the transaction, which have included certain retention packages to key employees at University of Phoenix, WIU, and Apollo Education Group, together with our global subsidiaries. And those are in place to assure that we have personnel which can go forward to execute the transaction, regardless of whether they may or may not be needed subsequent to the transaction. So, for instance, we have a corporate development arm at Apollo Education Group in both our corporate development and legal teams, which look at acquisitions. Most of them have been international, but we've had some tuck-in acquisitions for our domestic institutions. AGM, which is an extremely sophisticated private equity firm, may decide that they don't necessarily need that capability of Apollo Education Group. That's really not an educational factor, but it's a factor here, because those people had to remain in place to support the transaction. There are also a series of alternatives in place for retention of key employees subsequent to the transaction. And there are a variety of plans in place, because Apollo Education Group goes through with many of its key employees an equity planning cycle which traditionally occurs at this time of year and which needs to be delayed pending the transaction. So there are, without going into too much detail, although we can if you like, there are plans in place to either implement that equity cycle in the October time frame, depending upon the buyer's preference, or to implement what will be the buyer's new retention strategy subsequent to closing, which the buyer is developing, but of course we cannot implement, nor can we have absolutely detailed discussions because of an FTC concept called gun jumping. But there's a wide variety of planning which is going into place based upon either eventuality. That is, the transaction closes at a point in time where the buyer's retention packages can go into place, or if the settlement is delayed potentially to the end of the calendar year, so that those equity cycles and retention pieces can go into place at an earlier date. So we are concerned, and we're working hard to think through that.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the supplemental license application for a change of ownership upon HOC and ED approval and final closing.
Second that.
Motion, say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. That's very detailed explanation. Regular degree granting license renewal application from Han University. Is anyone in person? Hold out. Those of you on the phone, please introduce yourself.
My name is Alex Holland. I'm the president of Han University of Traditional Medicine.
Is anyone else on with you?
No, there is not.
I can't believe you didn't want to take the ride up here again. I thought you really enjoyed that.
It was such an enjoyable experience last time. I really thought about it, but I thought I'd pass. Thank you.
Well, I am the lead this time. Would you like to give any comments about the school?
Sure. Thank you very much. Currently, we have 10 students. We have one student who will be graduating at the end of this summer. We have 3 confirmed and possibly 4 students coming in this fall, which will be a net of 3 students. We have, as you may know, applied for better financial aid, and I have been checking with them, and I got an email from our liaison earlier this week saying that they will let us know by mid-September what their decision will be regarding our ability to provide further financial aid. And if that goes well, and we are hoping that it would, then we can start combining our classes maybe in January, which will cut back on our overhead and potentially increase our revenue. We have developed a tag relationship, partnership with Pima Community College and the Transfer Admissions Guarantee Program. So students who go to Pima are guaranteed admission, assuming they can make all the admissions requirements that we have put before them. And that will start this fall quarter. And we have also signed up 2 additional schools in China to our student faculty exchange programs. So we're doing a lot of outreach, we're doing more marketing, and we're seeing just a little bit more in terms of results.
Nice to get to step in. I thought I'd ask you to give a brief summary.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, that was good. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing, so if I overstep my bounds, I'm sorry.
You can hang up on the radio.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Good. I tried to move the phone, which I succeeded in, but I also managed to press some buttons.
I see. Okay, I'm still here. Thank you.
Yes, I thank you, Madam Chair. I do have some questions. First, in the budget that you provided for us, am I reading this correctly that you are projecting to be profitable in 2016?
That was a projection. We are assuming we're not going to be profitable. We had a board meeting last week. We reviewed the budget, and we are assuming at this point that we will probably lose some funds for 2016. We are hoping to be profitable by 2017.
Okay. Can you put a little bit more specificity around some funds for me?
In terms of...
Well, you said that you anticipate losing some funds in 2016.
Basically, we'll probably be coming in at a deficit of probably between $20,000 to $25,000 for the year.
Well, that's a substantial improvement over prior years.
Well, we're working on it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And you've already given me an update on the financial aid situation with the federal program. And you also mentioned, but I didn't hear clearly, one of your plans is to be bringing in more students from China. Where are you on that process?
We have one student coming in this fall, and we're looking at possibly three or four students for the spring.
Okay. Those were my questions.
Okay, I'm sure you'd be really sad if I didn't have a few, this is Ms. Leonard. Okay, so some of them were answered by your statements, and by Mr. Walter, so I'll skip those. The catalog that was submitted to us, is that the one that was submitted to the Department of Education?
I believe that is the same catalog, and that was submitted about 8 months ago.
Because it doesn't have any references to Title IV in it, which obviously the current catalog you're giving out cannot have references to Title IV, but I would have thought that you would have revised a version of the catalog to submit to the department with Title IV policies. Have they not asked for that?
Yes. Those were submitted in a catalog, yes. So we had gone through that to make sure that all the information was appropriate and correct, and that was in the catalog that we submitted to the Department of Education.
So is that the same catalog that you gave to us to review?
I'm not sure when you received that catalog, but if you need an updated catalog, I'd be happy to send you one.
This is the catalog that you submitted with the renewal.
The renewal. Okay. So that was a couple months ago.
It's volume 15. And it says it's the 2015-2016 catalog.
So I guess I would say that we probably at this point, and this could be an error, I'm not sure, we submitted the catalog to the Department of Education to show them what we would put in our catalog once we were accepted to offer federal financial aid. But since we have not been approved to provide federal financial aid, we don't feel it would be appropriate to send catalogs to prospective students that would have that information, because we feel that that would be misleading.
No, I understand that you can't send it to students. I guess I would have thought that you would have given it to us, since that's the one that you will end up using. And the catalog you provided to us appears to be old. There is mention in the literature here that it's updated annually, but this one says the 2015-2016 but doesn't have start dates that go past this summer. So it doesn't appear to be the catalog that you'll be using in the license period that we are about to license you for. And honestly, given the other school that you're associated with and the deficits in that particular catalog, I was concerned about whether the catalog that you would be using going forward would meet all of the standards.
I am assuming that the catalog that we will be using as we go forward will meet all those standards.
I'm surely hoping so.
All I can say, yes, we're all hoping that.
All right, we'll leave that for a minute.
I believe the catalog that we've spent for the Arizona school has been updated appropriately.
All right, let me ask some questions about the enrollment agreement. Again, a partial question is whether this is the current enrollment agreement.
Yes, that is the current enrollment agreement.
So this has been in effect starting in 2015.
2016.
15. It says in Part B, tuition and expenses, and it talks about students enrolled starting in 2015, so I assume that's from 2015 forward.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
Can you repeat that one? The enrollment agreement says it's for students enrolled starting 2015. So does that
yes.
assume it's 2015 and forward, not just for the 2015 year?
Basically, we have not had any students that enrolled in 2016, so that still holds true.
Okay.
When we have students who apply for this year, 2016, that will be updated appropriately.
Okay.
We had none for 2015.
I have a couple of questions in the catalog, and if you keep in mind, obviously my review of the catalog did not include whether your policies met Title IV regulations, because it has it does not have any of that in there.
Right.
The catalog says it's issued annually, but it appears that this catalog was done for a two-year period, but if you have now done a new catalog, just be sure that your language is accurate. If it says it's done annually, that means you need to update it annually.
Very good.
I have some questions about the admissions. You require a two-year of accredited college or university study, 90 quarter credits or 60 semester credits at the baccalaureate level. Does that mean if someone has an associate's degree, they would not be admitted?
No. That means that generally an associate's degree is from like a community college, and so because they're at an accredited school, a student graduating with an associate's degree, if they have that number of credits, would be eligible for enrollment.
You need to clarify this, because as written, it's saying that it has to be 2 years of accredited college at the baccalaureate level. So just think about rewording how that is
okay.
worded. It could. I've often seen it says it would be transferable to a baccalaureate degree. That would be fine. But as worded, it would seem that you are not accepting people with an associate's unless it happened to be, I suppose, an associate's from a school that also offered a bachelor's degree.
Okay, very good.
And then there are two other places, one in that paragraph and one in the next paragraph, where you just have talked about 90 hours, and the reference it's referring to is 90 quarter credits or 60 semester credits, yet when you discuss it later, you talk about 90 hours. So please have that be uniform.
Okay.
On page 16 of the catalog, in the first paragraph, in the upper left, it still is referencing the Asian Institute, which was the name prior to it becoming Han.
That didn't get shifted. Okay.
And I didn't have an electronic version of this, so I couldn't do a global search, but it would behoove you to do that.
And by the way, on a number of your financial statements, they also say the Asian Institute.
Okay.
On page 18, your grievance procedure, it's worded a little bit differently here than it is elsewhere, I think on the EA, in the handbook, I'm sorry. In your handbook, it says the student is to start with contacting the academic dean, and this just says any individual faculty or administrative means. So just your policy should be the same. So whatever your policy is, have it in both places. There is no time frame listed of when the president of the university has to review the grievance. You do have the time frame when it gets bumped up, which is great. But you don't have anything about the timing of how long the president has. So you need to add that to it.
Okay.
In the financial policies on page 19, you say the tuition and fees are subject to annual increases between 7 and 10%. In your handbook, it says 4 to 8% on page 7. So please pick whichever is accurate and make sure it's in both places. There's a $10 late registration fee listed in the catalog on page 19, and it is not in the handbook. The $300 annual insurance fee is worded differently. So I don't know if that means it's two different fees or it's just worded differently, so please make it the same. The tuition dollars listed in the catalog do not match the tuition dollars in the handbook, so they need to be the same. You make mention of offering credit, a surcharge of 2%, and offering payment plans. Please ensure that you're meeting the Truth in Lending Act rules regarding any fees that you're charging. On page 20, your refund policy, it's clear in part of it and not in other parts. You say at the top that you will make a refund within 30 days of receiving a notice of cancellation, which is accurate. But for a student who's already started school, you don't say when those refunds will be made. And it needs to specify that all refunds would be made within 30 days, and then you can just say what the starting point is of when that 30 days begins. But it doesn't. The 30-day list at the top doesn't appear to refer to part of the bottom.
Okay, thank you.
Your official termination date, again, this is worded differently in your catalog than it is in your handbook. And just to be clear, there are two critical dates for refunds. One is the date that you use to determine the percentage that is retained. And for an attendance-taking institution, that would be the LDA. For a non-attendance-taking institution, it would be the date that the school becomes aware the student is no longer attending, and there's some limits on that. And the date of determination is the date that is used when the refund clock starts. And sometimes they're the same and sometimes they're different, but they have to have two distinct explanations. And your policy is unclear. It's clearer in the handbook than it is in the catalog. In the catalog, you're saying that both for calculating the percentage and making the refund, you're going to use the LDA. But in your handbook, you say you're going to use the date you determine the student is no longer in school, which is when the 30 days would start. So figure out what you're doing and make that consistent. And that's it. All my comments about the handbook were already referenced in the comments about the catalog.
Yeah, thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions they would like to bring forward?
Another question. Hi, Alice. Good morning. This is Paul Mittman.
Can you hear him okay?
Good morning, Paul. Yes, thank you.
So You'd mentioned earlier that your projection for this fiscal year would be a loss of in the 20,000 range.
Yes, between 25 and 30, probably.
And I was just wondering if you had an update, because I'm looking at the income statement through March of 16. And so the revenue at 20, the tuition at $24,000 doesn't look like it's going to reach the level, you know, if you just multiply that by four, it would be about $100,000 in tuition compared to last year at $145,000 and the previous year at $160,000. It also looks like clinic revenue is down. Comparing the patient care from previous years, it was in the 30 and 20,000. It looks very small in the income statement for March 2016 at $605. I'm just wondering what are you seeing, either an increase in tuition since March, the end of March, or are you seeing an increase in patient care or patient volume since then, or are you, you know, trimming expenses because, you know, last year's loss is, you know, $92,000, and so how are you doing that from there all the way down to the $20,000?
We have had some increase in tuition in terms of students coming in this fall. We have actually had increases in clinic revenue as well. We've actually decreased some of our overhead in terms of individuals working at the school in terms of administration and faculty. We basically had, losing my voice, I'm sorry. Working from both ends, we have increased specifically the clinic revenue and a little bit in the tuition revenues. But I think when you couple that with the cutting of some salaries, that we're looking at decreasing the amount that we would lose in the course of 2016. So we're hoping to get it down to probably about $25,000. That would be ideal. We could cut it out.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Sure. No.
Okay. I don't feel that we can approve a license without seeing the current catalog. So since this catalog was for a period that really ends this summer and our licensure will be going forward, I make a motion that we defer action, that you provide that catalog to Ms. Stanfield, and then would the proper procedure be that they be put on the next agenda? Mm-hmm. And then you'll be put on the next agenda.
Which will be in October.
Okay, it'll be in October.
Do we know what date that will be in October yet?
Fourth Thursday. I'm sure it's posted on the website.
Okay, sounds good. The Arizona school is having a site visit, so in early October, so I'm going to make sure that I was available.
October 27th.
That's good. That's good.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion carries. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for all your assistance. Appreciate it. Bye bye.
The next item on the agenda is the regular vocational program and degree granting license renewal and review of financial status for Brighton College. We are Mr. Waller and for financials.
The real stuff. I would argue this is more real.
I would say so.
Ms. Santo, can
you give us an update? Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. February, I received a copy of the December 2015 financial statement. After a review, I had concerns regarding the financial status of Brighton College and was going to refer the matter to the Finance Committee. And as I will repeatedly say throughout, because we have had a shortage in a lack of a form for the Finance Committee, they have been unable to meet. So then at the same time, now we are just received their license renewal, so the whole renewal is being referred to the board for review and action.
All right. If you'd all introduce yourself, please.
We will. Good morning. I'm Paul Zignoni, president of Brighton College. To my right is Sam Fernandez. He's the vice president. And to his right is Chris Carraway. He's VP of Operations. And I think on the phone, we should have Doug Feeney, who's VP of Finance. Doug, are you there? There we have it. I know he's traveling today.
Tom, would you like to give
me a I am, Paul. I had you on mute.
Sorry. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Now, sorry, what is your last name? Mr. Feeney?
Feeney.
F-E-E-N-E-Y?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Who gets to be the spokesperson?
We want to start with Sam.
Sure. Thank you, first of all, for allowing us to come before you and present our summary and where we stand currently. Since the information was submitted, would you like me to address the financial situation first?
Great.
All right.
So for the audio, that was a two thumbs up.
Okay. I'll address the information that you have in front of you from the original application or the original information that was submitted in February. Do you have that information?
We do.
Excellent. Okay, so we have some projections that were submitted back in February for 2016-2017, and those included courses released and change percentage. I can give you some updates on where we stand currently with regards to those numbers. And I'm excited to inform you that we are pretty much on target with many of those projections that we submitted back in February. Where we are basically, and I didn't bring my calculator, but I can let you know that since March, through August, and again, I didn't add these up. You know what? I need to add these up so I can give you an actual projection so it can coincide with the numbers that are on that. Bear with me, please. Appreciate that. Yeah. I'm referencing the right numbers here. Yeah, I'm going to get that. Yeah, I want to match it up to the quarterly numbers so that they're looking at the same numbers that we're looking at. Q2.
The
Yeah, I would do that. Okay, I can get it. I have the monthly numbers.
Okay.
If that's sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I didn't add up the quarters. All right, so in February we projected 89. Our actual was 123 for courses released. We projected for March.
Which line item is this? Is this revenue or?
This is courses released, which bears directly to our revenue.
Okay.
So we only recognize revenue when courses are released. Even though we collect tuition in many cases in advance, but we only recognize it as the student progresses.
So courses released means that students attending?
Correct. They were released and they're currently attending a course. That's correct. Which is how we recognize it.
Can you repeat those numbers?
Sure. So I'll start with March. So we projected 89, actual was 123.
Okay.
April we projected 100, actual was 103. May we projected 110, actual was 101. June we projected 116, actual was 195. I'm sorry, 95. July we projected 121, actual was 96. August we projected 126. We are right about 120. About 120 as we speak. We should hit 130. That's what we're projecting. We have until next week, but we're having a very good month for many reasons. And I'm open to any questions on those numbers I just shared with you.
Well, I may have completely misread some of the material that you provided.
Sure.
So in the pack of materials that we have, there is a schedule. It's a two-page schedule, marked P&L dot, and it goes across, starts out January, February, and what we call goes through December. And gives us the net income and the EBITDA numbers. Okay. Then there is a version that is labeled P&L 2016. It's got total numbers for 2015 and year-to-date through June of 2016. Okay. The financial statements that you provided us showed income for 2015 at a loss of almost exactly $500,000. Whereas through June of this year, you showed a loss of $282,000. I understand income isn't even throughout the year, but through 6 months, you have a larger loss rate, if you will, than you did last year. So are things really improving, or are they remaining basically the same as 2015? Where is the company?
From a trending perspective, we are, in my opinion, trending the right way. We are on track to increase our enrollments starting in August over last year. We've initiated several new partnerships, several new agreements, and we anticipate with some of the cost cutting that we've recently implemented, along with the increase in student enrollment, thus courses released, we anticipate that number will start to subside, the net loss that we've experienced.
Okay. So what is your break-even enrollment now? With reduction in costs?
Yeah.
So what is
our break-even should be approximately 150 courses released per month, gets us to essentially break-even.
Okay. And what is your enrollment now?
Our current enrollment is active students. We have our own definition of what we consider an enrollment.
Right, right.
Our active student population is approximately 270 students that are progressing on a month-to-month basis, submitting assignments, essentially. We do have a larger active population. Those are students who are on probation, who have taken a leave of absence but are still enrolled. Still, you know, our goal is to re-engage them.
So to compare apples to apples. I think if I've got the term correctly, is it courses released?
Correct.
Okay.
Revenue recognition.
Right. So if I translate that into enrollment.
Correct.
where are you, that number, compared to courses released?
We need to be at about 300 active students to hit that break-even point, which we're getting close.
Okay, and that 270, that was just for vocational, or is that the combination of vocational and degree program?
That's a combination.
Okay.
Correct. Correct.
And I apologize. I normally carry with me some those Post-it flags that I can easily find my place. And let me get to there. We go. My next question goes to your capacity to continue to fund losses for a while. You have a quick ratio that is almost one, but not quite. Okay. We would prefer it to be above one, obviously. Your amount of members' equity, again, this is at year-end, December 31st, 2015, is less than the annual loss that you had last year. So if we continue to incur the same amount of losses, you'll have completely wiped out equity in the company. And so that calls into question the school's ability to continue to provide operations while you hope to improve performance enough to be return to profitability. So help us understand where that line is going to cross. When are you going to run out of financial capacity, and how much before that are you planning on being back in profitability?
That's a good one. Would you like to address?
I can. The way it's trending this month in September, it looks like Brighton should become profitable September. And the ownership groups are behind funding Brighton until it becomes profitable. It was really, from Sonoran Desert Institute's perspective, it was a strategic purchase almost a year and a half ago, to move some of the programs away from SDI over to Brighton. SDI is a... It was a gunsmithing school, now it's a firearms school, so we moved some programs over. And as someone mentioned earlier today, it was really a startup, and anytime you have a startup, it's going to hemorrhage cash for a while, right? Which is done nicely. But at least the ownership, both ownership groups, Lernke and ourselves, we're behind the school and going to fund it until it becomes profitable, and we're very close right now. So we're committed to that.
Those are my questions.
Okay. Concerns about your drops. You're very high. Your retention rate is 65%. Can you tell me, is that normal for the programs you're offering and students you're enrolling? And talk to me about that. Or is that that's where I see the biggest issue is that you're not retaining students.
Right. The trend previously was an issue with regards to retention. We've addressed that. We've implemented some new processes. We've really focused on student retention, student progression. That's been a big push, and that number has actually been
improving. And when did you implement those changes?
Those changes were implemented around the February, March, April timeframe.
And so can you give me an estimate of from February to June what your retention was based on those changes?
Retention was hovering in about the 48 to 50% range. Now we're hovering at closer to 65% as of our last report.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
And the goal is to continue to improve that.
Of course. Talk to me a little bit about your marketing plan. You said you're doing some community outreach and your corporate partnerships. How are they coming along? I know you had some things in here already that you've done. I'm wondering if those were previous agreements and partnerships you've had, and what have you done as far as new partnerships?
Sure. I'm very happy to address that. One of the challenges of being a non-Title IV school is to try to identify target markets that can afford to go to school.
Right.
One of the programs that's done very well for us is a nursing program that targets practicing nurses. So we've done very well with that particular program. So most of our marketing dollars that we do invest do go toward generating inquiries for that nursing program. But aside from that, what we've discovered is that there's a huge need and a big gap when it comes to providing career and technical type education programs to social service organizations, many of which, for the most part, are not targeted by most traditional colleges and universities. So we have formed some partnerships with those types of organizations. One of them recently launched. We've seen a lot of success. And we anticipate that to continue. It's a national workforce organization, nonprofit, that has significant funding dollars to fund training and development in career fields, which are the exact same programs that we offer. So there's a lot of excitement there. We've also recently launched a CTE initiative, Career and Technical Education Initiative, with high schools. That, as we speak, is launching because most of those types of partnerships usually launch in the beginning of the school year. Even though we've been speaking with schools, you know, going back to January, February, these have now launched. So we are anticipating, you know, a pretty substantial number of students enrolling in our program. And with these CTE agreements, the high schools we've partnered with, many of them provide funding. They provide funding for these students to pursue career and technical programs while they're still in high school.
Okay. So what is your estimate as far as the students gain on these working with these social organizations?
The students gain. I can give you one in particular, the National Workforce Organization. It's through Deseret Industries, in case you're curious. Deseret Industries is a national workforce organization affiliated, you know, with a church. We just launched, and this month alone, we're anticipating 20 students enrolling in our program in the initial launch, first month, and we've been in contact with approximately 20 locations. So there are a total of 80 locations throughout the country. So we're working very closely to reach out to all of them and eventually, you know, form that a partnership that aligns with their goals and objectives, which is job placement. That's how they were measured, training and job placement. And then just continue to nurture this relationship across the country. So we just launched it, and we're getting some very positive results. And with CTE, we have partnerships not only in Arizona, but in California, and now recently, as of this week, a virtual high school in Georgia that will be enrolling 7 students next week. Even though it's a small number, it's a pilot for them, but they plan on expanding that next semester. The charter management organization in California is fairly large. It's basically 3 high schools, 6,000 students, and they have a budget of over $10 million for career and technical education. So we hope to, you know, tap into a portion of that this semester, which, again, we are launching this as we speak. We should start seeing the first group of students. In fact, we already have 2 that have enrolled, but we should start seeing the first substantial group of students next week. They just started their semester last week.
Okay,
so that's
good.
Another example. And we have other. I have other examples if you want to hear them.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Your strategies for handling sustainable growth, your infrastructure improvements, have they been done? The phone system, the IT resource upgrade, the CRM, LSM upgrades?
All of those initiatives were essentially ones that I focused on when I came on board in January. We have implemented a centralized voice over IP phone system, which allows us to hire employees anywhere. Our student tracking system has been upgraded. Again, a web-based system, which gives us flexibility. Our CRM system is continuing to be upgraded, which allows us to track our student inquiries more effectively. Not only student inquiries, but also lead sources and conversion, so that we can better track the metrics behind, you know, the investment that we make in acquiring students. So that's something that we're really, it's been going really well, in fact. So the systems that we're utilizing to support our students and the growth are in place.
Okay.
Yep.
No other questions from me. I am concerned about the retention rate, and that it's nice to hear you have strategies in place. should be a big concern, especially if you're working with these organizations that are paying for students to go there.
Correct.
I want to make sure these students are able to complete the program and be
completely
successful.
Understood.
So, questions from anybody?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, could you just elaborate a little bit on some of the cost reductions? You mentioned that the school will be profitable, you anticipate September or mm-hmm. in the fall. Are you talking about for the month of September, or are you talking about for the fiscal year of 2016?
Not the fiscal year, but moving forward.
Moving forward.
Correct.
Okay. So
correct.
You're already at $281,000 in the red 6 months in at 279 or so mm-hmm. students, and your expenses are more than double the revenue, right? And so could you just elaborate on how you're going to cut the expenses down? Because I don't exactly see how getting to 300 is going to make that big of a difference from a $500,000+ deficit. You know, and so could you just show me, looking on the schedule of operating expenses on page 13 of the audit, you know, where you're going to be cutting, and if you do, like, how is that going to impact the ability to provide the education, especially to a growing student body?
Yeah, great question. So a lot of these expenses were addressed when I came on board early in the year. These were expenses related to strategic initiatives that weren't performing, that were essentially costing us more money than they were producing. So that involved staff reduction. So we're now at the point where I would consider us at a bare minimum in terms of staffing. So we reduced a significant amount of our operating expenses that way. We've taken a look at other expenses related to lead generation, and I think we scaled it back. We are in the process of continuing to scale it back when it comes to our cost of leads, our spend to acquire leads or inquiries. Those are the biggest ones, marketing and wages and salaries. I mean, that is the bulk of our expense. So, and we've addressed it. And we're, I think, at a point now where once we start to acquire more students, we can grow and scale according to a ratio that makes sense financially for the school, but also from a customer service perspective. We're getting it down to the point where we know exactly where we need to be so that we can provide the best customer service so that these students have a good experience, that they retain, that they achieve their goals, and, you know, it's a win-win for everyone. And that's what we didn't have that before. We have it now. Okay. I hope that answers your question.
Sure. And so, in other words, the advertising has gone down from the $179,000 last year. And then the basically the salaries and wages has gone down also. And I guess I could probably figure it out, but can you tell me approximately where it is at this point? In this year, six months in, let's say, 2030.
I don't have that. Doug, do you have that information handy where you're at?
I do not, Sam.
Okay, sorry. I didn't bring that information.
And then I guess again to David's point, in case you know you end the year. Would you anticipate to end the year in the red?
Right.
Do you anticipate another capital contribution mm-hmm. from the owners or investors, similar to the $880,000 that's been invested
yes.
so far?
Mm-hmm. If it's needed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion? Motion?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll make the motion to approve the 2016 regular vocational program license renewal application with the stipulation that a $44,482 surety bond is posted and that you will submit to quarterly reporting.
Can we round that to $445,000?
I guess.
45. Is it a typo?
45. Not 400.
I was like,
bond.
45,000.
Got it. Sorry.
David wants to make sure we're protected.
And
you're in agreement to the bond?
We are.
Yes.
I'll second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
I hope you can afford that extra $518.
Yeah. Dollars. Just a little wisely, thank you.
Thank you. Good luck. Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Thanks for your time.
The next item on the agenda is the provisional jury granting license renewal for American University of Sovereign Nation. Those will both come forward. Can you give us a summary?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. AUSN is seeking renewal of the 2016 provisional degree granting license renewal. I have provided to you an updated business and operational plan. Also provided to you a summary of the board's actions last year, which was to approve the conditional provisional, that the surety bond was no longer required, and to keep the state board apprised on progress towards accreditation, and part of a few other revisions. Then in January, you did approve the supplemental license application for a change of control. There was a significant change in control of the Board of Governors. Those that were previously there are no longer there at all, and the new ones, the new corporate board is comprised of Dr. Macer as president, Dr. I can never
hurry up.
Thank you. And Deborah Carabin. Mm-hmm. Also, I did inform Dr. Macer of the issues facing ACICS, and due to that they would not accept any new applicants for accreditation. So instead of going both directions, they are now solely going HLC. And your board member leads are Roger Financial, Apparatus, Accreditation, and others.
If you could introduce yourself, please.
Yes, my name is Darrell Mason. I'm the president of the American University of Sovereign Nations.
I'm Deborah Carpetia. I'm on the corporate board.
My name is Dinesh Kanal, and I'm board of governors for AUSN.
Thank you. Would you like to give us an update?
Okay. Well, thank you very much. So I give an update. In January, you kindly approved the PhD program and the Masters of Science in Sustainability. The PhD program has been quite popular. We've exceeded our expectations. We have 24 students enrolled, five of them who have had their public defense of their PhD proposals so far. We have more scheduled for every year. We have also submitted the graduation data for the year end of June 2016, and we've had 22 graduates in the last year. We have so far 30 master's graduates, and the list of their thesis is on the website. We have not yet put the content of their master's thesis on the website, but the plan is to do so. So academically, I think it's going fairly well. We now have 80 faculty, all of whom work pro bono. In the budget submission, it only includes a cash contribution or cash payments. It does not include the provision of free lectures or free supervision from the faculty. In addition, we submitted a change of location because after discussions with the Council of the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community, where we had been, and in discussion with the San Carlos Apache Tribal Council members, we decided we can only sustain in the long term if we have a strong partner who will provide buildings and space free of charge, at least to us, and a commitment. In Salt River, we were paying a rent of $2,500 rental. So in May this year, after discussions with both councils, we thanked Salt River and we moved location. Currently, the situation is we have half our books in the Department of Education in the San Carlos Apache tribe, and we have been working for several weeks, in fact, as a consultant to the San Carlos tribe over the summer training all their teachers. But the council has not yet decided whether they will fully support our proposal and also which buildings on the tribal community would be provided. So where we are located, we had also a kind offer from a person, a landowner of 63 acres in Top of the World, which is in the traditional Apache lands between Oak Flat and Garnet Canyon in Globe. And so provided a building and the rest of the equipment and the insurance and everything is located to that address. And we're waiting in the discussions with San Carlos Apache Nation to see exactly what they will offer to us. And I feel that unless we can have a strong partner there, we need to find a strong partner to move forward with HLC. We need the contribution in kind, at least, and potentially financially from a solid partner to move forward. So meanwhile, we continue to operate, of course, academically and in that location, and in San Carlos, we've been having classes as well, but we don't have a physical address in San Carlos. We have the Department of Education has a post office box, and we have a separate post office box. They're trying to move buildings and see. We are separate. We've discussed with the San Carlos Apache Tribal College, and we're going to be separate from them. They're establishing a two-year college, but we propose there could be some complementarity to them. But they have no faculty, they have no curriculum, they have no degree, so we do not have a relationship with them. That was that. The donations in our budget are mainly from faculty and alumni. Since we now have 30 alumni, and we've been trying to develop that. Our projections are still based on the concept that we will not be getting tuition revenue. We hope next year with enough graduates and enough reputation we can do so, but that's this year's projection. And I think that's basically an update to supplement what we've provided. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to ask some questions for clarification. Just want to make sure, have you received any tuition dollars?
No.
At this point. That's important to us. I mean, obviously, it's important to the school, too.
Yes.
But from a liability standpoint, if you're not collecting tuition dollars, then we aren't potentially on the hook for reimbursing anybody tuition dollars.
Yes.
We don't have the ability to reimburse them their time. So how is your fundraising going since the departure of
Pocahontas?
Yes.
Yeah, so fundraising, we're trying to work with our alumni. We're adding some active alumni into the Board of Governors and also trying to have some more local members. We've added a couple local corporate board members. We've had one. We're trying to phone for successful to do that. Maybe Deborah can update you on the process of trying to receive back the assets that Dr. Jonas had apparently kept.
Well, we believe that there were inappropriate expenses, that there was some equipment that essentially walked out the door or perhaps went somewhere else, essentially our accounts were wiped out when he left. So we've asked him to make a reimbursement to us, and he refused, said that he was not responsible. So it's come to a point where we realize that now will be a civil action against him, and we're pursuing that, and we're putting that together. It's a very tedious process because at that point he was pretty much a one-man show. He was totally in charge, and so now it's a matter of trying to put everything back together from that time when he was handling everything. But we believe that we should have a strong action against him, and we need to make that filing very soon.
Okay. And have you been advised by your counsel when the statute for bringing that action would expire?
Well, we want to do it within the one-year period, which is coming up very, very soon.
You think you will be able to get it done in that time frame?
I think so.
Yeah, make him file. So you gave us some color on the relationship with the San Carlos Apache Nation. Mm-hmm. Is there a possibility that you may become in essence, state-supported institution?
No, I don't think so, because of the desire of myself and Dr. Parriol and many of the faculty was to be independent of the bureaucracy of the United Nations, which is the combined government structures of many governments attend,
right.
To add that independence and decolonize universities. So I don't think so. We also, one of our provisions is we want to retain independence from tribal council in the government structure. So that, in order to do that, that would mean it's maybe unusual for a tribal nation to support an institution that's not tribal college under their control, but we believe that's an advantage. So we have some backup plan if that does not work, both with alternative tribal nations, which we'll talk to, and the other option is since we have the offer of free land and free buildings to do something in that area of Arizona, and also since we now have students from 35 countries, and many also gradually more Native American tribes as well. I did write to every tribe in the United States, there's 560 of them, to see their interest in this type of endeavor to be independent of the, you know, like 2,000 tribal colleges, to be an independent graduate school from what was currently done. And there's some interest in that, but we will pursue that if we need to.
Okay. Those are my questions.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Can you update a little bit in terms of the accreditation process? I read in here we're going to move, we're going to start thinking about HLC. How are you? What is the time frame you're thinking of for that, and what are some of the steps you're taking to prepare for that?
So I did attend